Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, April the 17th, 2009.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Is it really time to be bearish the markets? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Vaclavic. He's with MF Global out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today are Jackie Vakes of the Stewart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. Here the way the numbers settled in Chicago week over week, high to low on the composite, that's the day and the overnight trade. May wheat futures, a 5.23 settlement, a penny higher for the week with a high of 5.33 and a quarter and a low at 5.13 and a half. May corn futures, 3.99 the high, the low at 3.76 and a settlement price at 3.76 and a quarter, down 14 cents. And December futures there finished 14 and three quarters lower at $4.07. Better go back and get the July wheat. It settled up a penny and a quarter in Chicago for the soft red at 5.34 and three quarters. May beans, $10.73 on the high, the low at 9.98 and a quarter, settled up 44 cents in the May beans to $10.51. November soybeans at $9.35, 13 cents higher on the day. April live cattle futures, $88.90 for the high, the low at $86.30. Settlement price at $88.32.5, 80 cents higher. April feeders at $99.17.5, finished $1.02.5 higher from the week previous. And the May hogs settled $72.25, down $1.20, with a high price of $73.45 and a low at $70.65. Commodity Week is a production of public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and funded in part by you, the listeners. It's time now for you to dial a phone number in case you've never given to a public radio station or to a public radio station program like Commodity Week. It's important that you do. The number to call is 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-WILL. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express are all accepted, and cash is king. If you're listening online, visit willpledge.org. However you do it, fund this program, make a contribution, do it now, and thank you. Again, our panelists in studio today are Jackie Vakes of the Stewart Peterson Group. She's out of Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. Mike, let's start with this question with some fundamentals. USDA says the corn carryout will be 1.7 billion bushels at the end of the season. Give me your number and defend it.
We're probably closer to about 1.9, Todd, and that's mainly because of the exports. Year-to-date commitments are running about 36% behind last year. The USDA's got 30% less from last year. So we're running at about 185 million bushels shy of USDA's expectations. The exports have improved here the last few weeks, but we're questioning whether we can make up that 185 million bushels, especially with the dollar starting to trend maybe a little bit more firm here as we get into the heart of planting. The PPI and the CPI data this week both confirm to the trade in general that we are deflationary still in the interest in the inflation mindset. So maybe the corn side of the equation won't be able to make up those lost exports just because of the dollar staying firm. And so that's kind of the mindset we have. And I think the other thing goes back to where are the new crop acres at in corn? So that's still such a wide open thing that I think the trade's tending to want to try and play the corn down here until we get into a real weather scenario.
Jackie Vakes, your carryout number for the current crop year, and defend it, please, for corn.
Well, I'm probably on the solar opposite side here. I'm at about 1.3 billion bushel carryout, and my defense would be, I do see us seeing steady improvement in the economy. I think that we've taken things down further than they needed to be taken just because of the negativity and the overreaction that we've seen at the Wall Street level. A good example of that is the minute that we've seen an improvement in Wall Street, we've seen some positive moves. Now, mind you, we haven't seen it in the corn as much as we've seen it in the beans, primarily because of the very tight carryout that we've got in beans. But I do think that as quickly as USDA took away all the bushels for ethanol usage and as well as feed usage, and I don't think the feed usage numbers are as bad as they think because they don't carry DDGs in that number. And so I think we could easily get back 300 million, maybe even 400 million. And again, I couldn't agree more with Mike. Where are the corn acres? And are they going to get planted?
You know, Mr. Gleason may have had an inkling that you were on opposite sides of this, and that may have been the reason we started there. So let's go back through those numbers.
Is this point, counterpoint, Todd, or commodity week?
I think it's that.
Well, maybe you guys had questions for each other, and if you do on where you stand on this, please jump in. But we've got a 1.9 from Mike. We've got a 1.7 from USDA. Okay. And Jackie, you stand at a 1.3, and you both have valid reasons, I think, for feeling that way. What is it that a producer is to do? I mean, I know the producer, Mike, that or Jackie, well, believe me. but it's good to have this kind of discussion,
yes.
Right?
So
So what is a producer to do?
I don't think that Mike's and my approach is probably a whole lot different in the respect that we're certainly going to be out there, and I'm looking at a 1.3. You don't make your marketing decisions based on outlook necessarily. You have to base that on risk management. Risk management means that when you have opportunities, and if you have profit levels for your farm right now, in my particular case, you'd be doing puts, and then you would look to do, you know, some cash sales if cash offers that opportunity to you. I don't think it's a whole lot different there. You know, the carryout itself is important to the price ultimately, but what's important to the producer is profitability, and that means you have to use risk management to be able to control that profitability.
Now, fortunately, your risk management, well, risk management commodities. So.
Yeah, there's a loan collection agency in Lafayette called Risk Management. We get some pretty nasty calls once in a while. Now, I think, Todd, I think Jackie has a real good point there. I think also for us, what we've tried to do is really work the wheat in as that leader to the corn market, especially globally. And I think that's worked really, really well here. Until we get a good firm handle on corn supply and demand, the market, I feel like, has kind of chosen to take corn kind of in the same path as wheat here the last few months. And it's only until we get a firm grasp of the corn supply and demand that corn's going to be able to trade its own fundamentals. Until that happens, I think the wheat's going to be a real big issue. I guess the other reason I'm trying to play it more on the safe side of excess supply is because when you look at U.S. emissions of in the transportation sector, the United States makes up a third of the global emissions of greenhouse gases. And almost, what is it? I think it's almost a third of that is just in the usage of cars and trucks. And so ever since ethanol did take, and Jackie brought this point up as far as maybe the USDA will come back in and increase ethanol, but when ethanol turned into a negative political hot potato, it seems like the science started to follow that negative political hot potato. And so I'm trying to be a little bit more concerned and conservative about maybe ethanol demand won't come back as fast.
Well, I'll bet you say that she didn't decide that it was a negative political hot potato. But nonetheless, we have ethanol, and we do have concerns on ethanol. And this week, and maybe we should go through those concerns, because there were a couple of things that came out of Washington, D.C. that are important to ag. U.S. EPA issued a report Friday that confirms greenhouse gas pollution is a serious problem. It follows, of course, President Obama's call for a low-carbon economy and strong leadership in Congress on clean energy and climate legislation. And to follow that up, EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson says this pollution problem has a solution, one that will create millions of green jobs and end our country's dependence on foreign oil. Now, do you read that as good for corn-based ethanol are detrimental? And I'm fairly certain that you can make a case either way. Jackie?
Well, I'd have to say, explain to me how you define green-based jobs. What does that really mean? I mean, what did she say? So I think when you look at it from the ethanol standpoint, what are our choices right now? It takes a long time for reforestation, which is a carbon control. Cellulosic ethanol really isn't on the table just at this point in time. And so, and Obama's administration has clearly stated, you know, that they want something to be done about this. So what are their choices? That's the question, I guess, that I have to ask. How can it be extremely negative to ethanol? And to go back to Mike, you know, when you look at the whole situation politically and you look at the emissions coming from cars, how do you think that that's going to impact California's bid to try and stop using ethanol when they have probably the highest emissions of any place that there is?
I think that's a great point. I think the only problem is the greenhouse gas emissions from ethanol have to be 20% lower than those from the conventional fuels. And so to me, Todd, what it's boiled down to here in your question specifically is, and this came out in a Newswire print that I thought was just nailed it, the EPA is going to have to decide when in the production process the life of a biofuel, life, quote unquote, of a biofuel begins. If it's in the cornfield, then it's anti-ethanol. If it's when the blending takes place in the gasoline, it's pro-ethanol. That's the type of question that I hate to put my tail out on the line. And like Jackie's talking about, there's plenty of risk management tools you can cover your bases on. So I guess rounding it all up with a 1-9 carryover and a negative connotation in ethanol, what do I have on my side if wheat's not on my side? Well, it goes back to weather. And that's where we are not pushing corn hedges hard at all. A, it's not as profitable. And we've got plenty of work to do to push bean hedges for new crop. And we're going to wait for the weather to tell us a little bit more and maybe get a wheat trend back here in the next couple weeks before we push corn hedges too. So even though we're on opposite extremes of the supply side, we're probably attacking it about the same way.
Right. So there is some convergence in the way the two of you are attacking this marketplace, and that convergence says we're not ready yet to hedge it out, which means you're at least friendly the marketplace in some form. Is
futures,
right?
Futures. I think that's right. I think the 1-9 versus 1-3 goes back to basis. You know, that's where somebody's going to have to give on basis probably down the road.
Well, there's no question about that, and I think when you look at the national cash averages, with every move up or every move down we've had on corn, we haven't seen any change in basis in almost weeks now on average in the U.S., which can mean one of two things. Farmers aren't selling because they have enough cash. That's a little scary. You know, when you look at what the carryouts have been on the farm, at the farm level from our quarterly grain stocks. But at the same time, you know, you talked about wheat and wheat not being your friend. Today there was a report that did come out, you know, on the wheat potential losses in Oklahoma and Texas. You know, Oklahoma, Texas produced 265 million bushels of wheat last year on the hard red side. They were supposed to be 212. Today they came out, they believe they're close to 100 million. And that can have a very big impact on the trade level. And let's face it, you know, wheat was the leader this last time around. And mostly because of the demand on the world side of things. But it's going to come back to the American dollar, just like you talked before. If the American dollar weakens, I think we'll see a big increase in wheat imports, exports. And if it does that, it's going to bring corn along with it.
Let's turn our attention. We only have maybe a minute and 20 seconds left to soybeans, so you're going to have to just summarize where you stand on the soybean market at this point. Jackie, we'll start with you.
Well, you know, after $1.50 up, I think that it was understandable that we were going to see some pullback today. I do think beans still have some opportunity to go higher, and I think the before we get to the June time frame, we could be looking at the $12 bean level.
And Mike?
We see that the beans are not going to be able to go up by themselves at this point. It's going to need wheat and corn to help them at this point, Todd. That's point number one. Point number two is we hit those USDA numbers fairly accurately on the acreage report, but we're going to bump those 3 million in our May update. And so we are, I think, seeing a big increase coming in bean acres here.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Public Radio from the University of Illinois. If you'd like to help fund this program, you can dial this number now. It's 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-WILL. We'll be back in a moment to talk with Joe Vaklovic of MF Global. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, April the 17th, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio are Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois. I know on behalf of them that they'd like you to dial this number, 217-244-9455, and pledge your financial support for Commodity Week. Joe Vaklovic with MF Global out of Chicago, Illinois, is our guest today. Good afternoon to you, Joe. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Todd. How you doing? It's good to be on the show again.
I'm doing very well. Thanks for being on the show. Can you tell me, from your vantage in Chicago, what did this week feel like compared to previous weeks?
Well, the story here this week was, I think, you know, in general, you'll get the corn market and the soybean market kind of on the same page for the most extent. And this week was just the total opposite of that. You know, since the beginning of the month, we've seen the bean market tack on a good $1.50 in most of the old crop contracts. And corn, on the other hand, just hasn't been able to get anything going here. You know, looking back on this week, it seemed like every day the bean market consistently higher, 10 cents higher, 12 cents higher. Today we came in, we opened higher, closed lower, which I kind of look at as being a negative thing. But, you know, overall, I guess we do have some pretty strong bean demand here, but also a market that's a little overdone. On the corn end of it, I think we're doing a lot with weather here. The market's really anticipating a real nice planting window next week. We're going to get some good weather throughout the Midwest, and I think we're just expecting that some major progress is going to be made here.
Joe, when you look at the bean demand side of the equation, I guess the biggest question in my mind that's so hard to try and figure out here is there a threshold price-wise where potential buyers just turn away until after planting? And can you tell whether we're getting close to that level yet or not?
Well, when we're talking at this point, we're talking potential buyers. We're talking about China, and China's the one who's pushing this thing right now. I mean, I don't know. I don't think there's anybody out there who really knows what the price threshold is going to be. Like I heard you guys talking before, you know, if we get some kind of rally in the dollar, that's going to have something to do with it. As far as the price threshold, I mean, they were buying beans, you know, back in 08 at a lot higher levels. I certainly think we can move higher if the demand's there. At the same time, I do believe the market's, I don't believe it. It's a fact that the market's overbought here at these levels. From a technical standpoint, you know, you may see some kind of break here coming into next week, but overall, I think the downside may be fairly limited.
Joe, when you look at the floor traders, what do you think it's going to take to get them to want to rally corn?
Well, when you're talking about floor traders, that would have been a legitimate question a few years ago, but now I think it's more to do with these fund traders and, you know, the guys who are really controlling the markets. First off, but I think the corn market, you're going to need a couple things. You're going to need, you know, first off, maybe some major delay in planting, which I guess I don't see happening at this point. My personal thought, I think every acre of corn and soybeans that the USDA says, plus probably another 2 million go in the ground this year. How we, you know, divvy up those additional acres, I'm not too sure about. Last year, we had some major flooding you know, in Iowa and parts of Illinois, and we still ended up with, I think, a pretty decent increase in acreage from the March report to the June report. So I'm kind of ruling that thing out right now. I think you're going to have to see some kind of drought. You're going to have to see some kind of return to major investor confidence just in the financial markets in general, or you're going to need something crazy to happen in beans. You're going to need beans to shoot to $13 or something to really get something going in this corn market, I think.
Tell me how it is that you view those fund traders that you're suggesting control the market. How old are they? What are they capable of gathering from the agricultural industry on the size and scope of a crop? How interested are they? Are they computer traders? How does it change the way you attack the marketplace?
A fund, when you say the word fund trader, it's a very vague term, to say the least. A fund trader is anyone. There's several of them in Chicago, New York, all around the world, really. And if you've seen the news here over the last, you know, year or so, you'll see the story that, oh, hedge funds, you know, were huge in 08 and you know, gave a ton of money back later in the year. And, you know, a lot of them went out of business. But bottom line here, there's a lot of outside speculative money in these markets. And I think what these traders look at in particular is they need some kind of story here. And the story's there in the bean market. It's just not there in the corn market right now. I mean, you know, you watch the news and you see what's going on. There's good demand for beans. The USDA told us we're going to have less acres, than originally anticipated, which we might. I think the number may be a little low. And, you know, you throw that in with the Chinese demand story and, you know, again, a lower production out of South America, and you know, you got yourself a pretty bullish story there. When you look at the corn market, you don't have those kind of dynamics right now.
But, so your expectation would be that the fund traders would be far more bullish than most of those in the agribusiness world. Is that right?
I think that if you're talking about the soybean market,
right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's good speculative interest there, and there's going to be a good story there for the rest of the year with these old crop contracts in particular. With the corn market, like I said, again, I don't see anybody coming after this thing real aggressively unless you get some kind of, you know, scenario in which, like I said, the beans shoot up to a much higher price level, or you get some kind of real major weather issue this summer.
Do commercials control enough of the marketplace or space that they're capable of fencing it out or duking it out with the fund traders at this point? I mean, my thought here is that if you've got those fund traders and they're more bowled up than the agriculturalist, let's call it that way, how do they, commercial trader or producers, holders of grain, deal with them?
Well, if you're an owner of grain, I mean, you're going to be short the market for the most part here. I mean, the corn market, I mean, you know, if you're a big commercial who owns grain, you're going to be short hedged right now and probably doing all right in the corn market as far as your futures position would go anyways. But I don't, you know, a commercial is not someone who's going to speculate on the markets in most cases, whereas the hedge fund trader is. And if they've got enough fuel to come in here and you know, push commercials around, then I guess that's something that they're going to have to deal with. But all in all, I guess if you want to know my real reason why the corn market's not going up, I mean, you know, I think it has more to do with you know, perceived carryout numbers. It has more to do with, you know, the idea or the perception that the corn's going to get planted here in the next couple of weeks. And I think that's pretty much all there is to it.
Joe, how about on wheat? We, you know, we had corn weakness. We had bearish weather come in the southern plains. We had exports of 11 million bushels, and yet July wheat was able to close up a penny. Have we run out of sellers on praying, or have we run out yet?
Fund traders are still fun. If you look at the CFTC reports, fund traders have been short wheat. You know, something, the wheat market just seems like something, when I look at it, it seems like something that not a whole lot of guys are real interested in right now, to be honest with you. It made its huge move there, you know, the last year and a half or so, and it just seems like it's been kind of a dog market since. I mean, it hasn't made any big moves up. It's made its kind of big move down to what might be considered a more normal but still historically high price level. I guess I just don't see anything real big one way or the other coming out of the wheat market anytime soon.
Well, I'm going to go back to the corn market and just ask you a quick question. You know, when you looked at the EPA coming out and saying that they're considering 15% blend rate, that bumps us up against that 15 billion gallon production level. Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, is there any discussion going on at that? I mean, is that something that the traders look at right now and just go, well, yeah, okay, that means nothing? They're going to wait to see once if anything comes about?
I would agree with that. I don't think anyone's going to come in here and bid up this corn market based off that. It's something that, you know, could look at that, you know, we could explore down the road if that becomes a more real possibility. If it's something that becomes imminent, then, yeah, it's going to, you know, obviously change the balance sheets up quite a bit. And we're going to be dealing with a little bit tighter carryout. But, you know, that corn balance sheet has some room to work right now.
As we close out our segment with you, maybe we could get your ending stocks figure. We've got a 1.3, a 1.9, and a 1.7. Where do you stand?
I'm on the higher end. I go somewhere between 1.9 and 2.1, I think. My personal thought is that like I said before, I think every acre gets planted and then some. You're going to see a pretty decent corn acreage number. I guess I just don't see a return to extremely strong demand anytime soon. And, you know, as we saw with last year, you know, seed genetics are fantastic. I think we end up with pretty decent yields. I don't think we're going to have a real major problem with corn this year.
Joe, thank you so much for being with us today.
No problem. It's good to be here.
And Joe Vaclavic is with MF Global out of Chicago, Illinois. Time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities.
I think it's safe to say, especially with Joe's commentary and what we picked up on the floor, they're really looking for big planting progress next week, Todd. They may be disappointed because we're looking at 1 to 2 inch rains in a big area of the Corn Belt, and we're very far behind in Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, and some of those other key states. So let's see how Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning treats us.
And Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group.
And I'll just add to that, I think that Joe brought up a great point when he said perception, and that's exactly what we continue to trade all the time, is the perception of the market.
That's this edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to Jackie Vakes and to Mike Zuzulo and to Joe Vaclavic. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.